It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. It's Gil Alexander. Paul Carr to join us this hour to talk Champions League. Two games today, two games tomorrow, second leg of the quarters. He's got thoughts on those and a debate that shockingly made me angry yesterday, talking about Julian Edelman's retirement and this notion that somehow he has a Hall of Fame candidacy. Stop it. Stop it now. We'll talk about that with Paulie coming up. By the way, as you may or may not know, all Minnesota sports were postponed yesterday. Timberwolves, Wild, and Twins. In protest of the tragic shooting of Dante Wright. Well, the Nets-Wolves game, rescheduled for 4 p.m. Eastern today. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So we have some afternoon basketball today, that courtesy of Fantasy Labs NBA. So 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, Nets and Wolves. They will tip it off then. Let's bring him in from the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, also a VSiN contributor as well. Boy, he could tell us about everything else he does at NBC. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Drew Dinsick at Whale underscore Capper. How you doing, Drew?
Doing swell. How's it going for you today, Gil?
It's going very well. Tell us about the NBC part. Explain that to us.
Well, NBC Sports Edge is the betting arm of NBC Sports, and I do NBA previews for them right now. We did some Masters content, and as that grows out, hopefully you'll start to see me on more of their properties. Maybe cover the Olympics, some French Open, of course.
You know, that'd be that. Cool. That'd be awesome. How bettable do you think how much betting do you think the American sports audience will do with the Olympics?
Well, 2016, I handicapped everything from weightlifting to swimming to I bet a couple shooting events. I mean, there was betting, there was bettable action on everything. The highlights were for sure swimming and track and field, a lot of action on track and field. But it was a great 2 weeks. And then, the Winter Olympics rolled around in 2018. And, that was some of the funnest 2 weeks of betting of my life. That was just there was a huge menu of options. It was over under medals for different teams. And I remember I had this unbelievable sweat of France under gold. It came down to like a wardrobe malfunction with the ice dancing,
awesome.
And the French team got docked. And so instead of 5 golds, they got 4, and I had under 4.5. It was just a wild 2 weeks.
Tell me the truth, Drew. At that moment, were you questioning everything about your life, where you're like, I cannot believe this has come into my world?
No, you know, the low point was actually I found figure skating Reddit.
Awesome.
And we were combing through figure skating Reddit and looking at practice reports, and because there was this the men's favorite was this Japanese figure skater who was he was the odds-on favorite to win gold for like 3 years, and then he got badly injured in like the qualifying in Japan, and there was huge speculation as to whether or not he was going to be able to do his quad axel, which is his signature move.
Well, of course, and, who doesn't know that?
Of course, yes. And they had somebody who was like at the practice rink, and they were like doing reports of what jumps he was doing and how he was landing them and what the likely scores were going to be. And, you know, we got news from figure skating Reddit that he was landing the quads in practice. So we were like, okay, all in, -175. Like, there's no way this guy doesn't win gold. And I think he won it, setting a record. So that was quite fun.
Bruh, I've said it 100 times. Figure skating Reddit is the just where you get all the solid betting information. We have such an interesting relationship with the Olympics in this country, right? So the Summer Olympics, definitely like this 2 week love affair, maybe a week on each side, where we're like, oh, Michael Phelps. And then afterwards, wow, wasn't that amazing? And then we like completely forget about it. Winter Olympics, what's the old John Stewart line? More drunken dares than it is actual sports. But betting is the thing that just washes all of that away, right? We'll still bet on all of it. Doesn't matter. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, 100%. And this year coming up in Tokyo, having been delayed a year, it throws a little uncertainty into it. You know, it's going to be fun to watch, though.
I'm in. I can't wait for your reports on synchronized swimming. Is that still a sport in the Olympics, by the way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Long Beach is the home of the U.S. women's synchronized swimming team practicing going back to the 80s.
I can't wait. I expect a deep dive podcast on this very matter. It is Gil Alexander. It is Drew Dinsick. This is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeartRadio. I'm saying, those 2 weeks, and we'll be looking for content, we'll be all about the Olympics. Okay, NBA, obviously, and I talked to Dan Bespris about this earlier, Jamal Murray goes down yesterday, non-contact injury. We don't have the results yet, but it didn't look good for the Denver Nuggets. I hate to say this, but if he's done, are they effectively over?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't looking great for them anyway, because they're really starting to leak oil. Like you can see sort of the wear and tear on what Jokic has been asked to do to carry this team offensively is starting to show its teeth as well. And, you know, he's obviously, I think, still in the driver's seat for the MVP award at this point. But, you know, he's going to be absolutely limping into this playoff system. And you know, the Murray thing was just especially brutal for so many reasons. I mean, we can go on and on about this, but like why he was even playing at that point in the game, the game was over. You know, why he was, you know, being put at risk when he has been dealing with an ongoing knee injury and there was some instability already there. Like this was a little malpractice on the part of the Nuggets. And it's frustrating that he, you know, the guy who is so much promise and who we created some incredibly memorable moments in last year's playoff runs is not going to be able to be part of it this year. And you have to point a little bit of a finger at the NBA too, because, you know, they've really enforced this compact schedule and it's not clear to me why. You know, if they needed to cut, they're a creative crew over there. They're a creative group. They could have come up with, you know, some creative ways to help alleviate, you know, the budget issues. And if they had to get in 70 games for whatever local, you know, local deals that they needed to meet, I would have liked to see them be a little bit more creative and not put this compact schedule together, because, you know, Murray injury aside, like you're starting to see it affect the quality of play since the All-Star break. You know, we've had meaningful injuries to a number of stars now, you know, Durant and Harden notwithstanding, you know, the Embiid injury was an overuse injury. The Anthony Davis injury was an overuse injury. The LeBron injury was kind of fluky, but I can point to that as being potentially an overuse injury as well. And like if your top line stars are starting to drop like flies, and the quality of your product is suffering because of it, and it's all just because you have this you know, number of games that you must meet, you know, it's a frustrating situation all around. And I think you're starting to really see the impact of this compressed schedule on the player health.
Can we call it the year of the injury in the NBA? Is that too much? Because it just does seem like more elite players have missed more time than any other year that I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, this last 2 weeks has been even beyond the elite players. Like if you just go up and down the injury report, there are 5-6 guys questionable any given night for every single team. And it's like, this is not indicative of you know, of a healthy product, a healthy system. And you know, if I don't know, they're more creative than just forcing games down the players' throats and whatever happens. Like it's frustrating that it's gotten to this point. And I don't know if they, you know, cause everyone who's kind of in the know and the handicapping know, at least, you know, they use rest as kind of a key angle in handicapping the NBA in a normal season when the games are spread out more, because they know how important it is and how much it impacts performance. And now here you crush all the games together and they expected nothing was going to happen. It's kind of frustrating, to be honest.
So I've asked you this in some form or another before, but I want to ask it one more time because it has continued. The best NBA totals better that I know, and I mentioned him earlier, not by name, and I'm talking over thousands of games, maybe like 1,500, so maybe not thousands, but 1,500 games, many, many years. You know, he is, year in and year out, the best totals better that I've ever met. This year, it's just not working out. And so I've asked you this before. Because he wants to come on, but he wants to get, you know, he wants the season to rebound a little before he does, kind of thing.
Sure.
And so he's unwilling to sort of share exactly what he thinks is afoot. What do you think? Is it part of the conversation we just had? Or what's going on in games where the totals just aren't working out like a successful handicapper with totals might think they would this year?
Yeah, there are a number of factors. I'm not the perfect person to come up with this answer because I made the active decision in December. I'm going to skip totals this year and only focus on sides because I had a feeling that it was going to be a little squirrely and so I think in January I was tracking a little bit of like who's the influential movers, the totals moving up and down, like were they hitting, and there were plenty of examples where there was strong influence on the total one way or the other and it was not close.
This guy, just to let you know, he moves it at least a point and a half when he makes his picks known. So I mean, this is one of these guys, and it has not been close.
I stopped paying attention after January, so I'm not sure if there was some stretches where it's kind of normalized. But I can tell you in January, and even really through February and part of March, we had 5-6 teams that were on pace to set the all-time record for offensive efficiency. And you kind of dig into the stats a little bit. You look at a team like the Clippers. They're going to break the record for made three-pointers. From a three-pointers per game, you know, it's not an 82-game season, so they can't actually, the number of three-pointers is going to be a little lower. But, they're going to break the record for made three-pointers per game. And you look at sort of the underlying statistics, and open three-pointers in particular are going in at just an impossibly
amazing.
High club.
Yes.
Impossibly
high. It's amazing.
And it's not crazy because you have these empty arenas where there's no noise, there's no fan distraction. You're hearing communication between the players is a little better. Communication between the coach and the players is better.
That's a good point.
And so this idea that the offense is improved because of that is I can buy into that. I have noticed at least from betting sides that the number of blowouts is higher than ever too. And it has felt like certain teams either are waving the white flag just based on, you know, where they stand in the game come second half and or, you know, who's available because completely throwing a monkey wrench into, you know, team level performance. But it has been an extremely volatile year, at least from a scoring standpoint. I would not expect this to carry into the playoffs. I think once we get to the playoffs, there's going to be a little bit of a hard reset. But I'm definitely feeling for anyone who's been trying to play totals this season.
Here's the update, and it's of no surprise, sadly. This is from Shams. Nugget star guard Jamal Murray has a torn ACL in his left knee, sources tell The Athletic in the stadium. No surprise, non-contact injury. He was in tremendous pain, and there it is, torn ACL for Jamal Murray. And it follows that he will be out for the rest of the season and the postseason. So that sucks for Denver and those who had Denver tickets. Obviously, I don't want to sound too callous, but since we come from a betting standpoint, I want to throw that in as well. Six games, not a big NBA schedule tonight, Drew, but some interesting ones, particularly late between Boston and Portland and Miami and Phoenix. Any thoughts on those two games, or are you looking elsewhere?
Those are the only two I bet.
Oh, interesting.
I'm probably going to take a position on the Nets if it opens what we saw close yesterday. That was getting a little out of control, especially considering I don't think Towns is going to be available for Minnesota. But the two late games are the only two I took action on. I took both dogs. And I guess we can start with the Celtics and the Blazers game. These are two teams that are pretty clearly trending in opposite directions. The Celtics have, you know, we've been waiting and waiting. And I say we, there's a lot of Celtics fans in the betting public, I guess. And I'm not necessarily a Celtics fan, but I've been like, you know, patiently waiting for the opportunity to start, you know, getting fair price, you know, fair plays on them. Because I was counting on them turning around at some point. And Marcus Smart comes back and you can postulate all day long why he is sort of the key catalyst for this team. I think it's a team defense thing. But him back in the lineup at first was, it was a little bit of a rough misfit. His shot wasn't falling. His confidence wasn't 100% on the offensive side. But in the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden, the team defense is a heck of a lot better. Their in-game defensive adjustments have been masterful. And they've taken on a number of, relatively difficult competition, and they've done quite well. But, you know, most notably, just absolutely hammering the Nuggets on Sunday. But they're, you know, things are starting to break right for this team. I had the Celtics, and I laid the points against the Knicks the other day, where the Knicks hit that game-ending three-pointer that backdoored. But that was actually, I was kind of happy in that moment, because I was like, okay, this is going to throw the scent off people kind of realizing that the Celtics are playing a lot better right now, because they're going to look at the against the spread and they're going to be like, oh, well, they didn't cover, whatever. But they absolutely, you know, were the better team in that game by a long shot. And, you know, sure enough, this is the reward we get for that, kind of missed cover there, which is a near pick'em in a game against the Blazers. And the Blazers are trending exactly in the opposite direction. Every playoff caliber team that they've played in the last 2 weeks, they have gotten the doors blown off of them. They were not competitive against the Bucks, the Jazz, the Clippers, or the Heat most recently. And, you know, they now come up against the Celtics team that defends the guard position especially well. You have, you know, your two rangy wings in Tatum and Brown, plus the quality, defensive of Marcus Smart. This is going to be tough now for the Blazers to hang with the Celtics offensively in this spot. And I would have made this Celtics small favorite. I bet them +1.5 and plus money on the money line last night. And I think this is the reward, I think, for them really starting to put their season together. I do not know if this carries them with momentum into the playoffs to where they are actually a realistic threat in the playoffs, but seeding dependent, you know, they could draw someone like the Hawks or the Hornets in round one and have a relatively smooth play into round two, where they might be dangerous against a team like Philadelphia or Milwaukee or whoever they match up against.
Celtics and Blazers really kind of in the same positions in their respective conferences, where they are equally likely, at least in terms of record, maybe not by schedule and maybe not by handicap, but right now in sort of that no man's land between we're not going to be in a play-in game, we're playing for a seed, or we are going to be in a play-in game. Like, it could go either way just as easily with, what, about 15, 16 games left in the NBA season. Actually, a little more than that. That's hockey. Yeah. About 20 games left in the NBA season.
Just one more quick thing to add. Blazers straight up record, that is fool's gold, man. This is not a team that should be 31-22. And similarly, the Celtics should not be 20-26. But I think that's kind of shading the market a little bit right now. But the Blazers, they're, you know, I have them power rated as the 20th best team in the NBA right now, and I have the Celtics up around 15th. So this is a decent spot to back the Celtics.
All right, Boston is the play there at Portland tonight for all the reasons stated. Then Miami, Phoenix. Which way are you going there?
Yeah, so I'm taking the Heat against the Suns here, and again, a little bit of a decent schedule spot to get involved with the Heat here. The Suns, their run of late has been impressive, there's no doubt. But you saw sort of the oil was leaking a little bit as you got late in that game against the Clippers last week. That was their second of back-to-back games. They had Jazz, who they handled well, and very impressive performance against on Wednesday. They turn around on Thursday. They were competing. They were absolutely in that game against the Clippers through the third quarter. All of a sudden, the Clippers flip a switch. They make a couple of offensive adjustments. The Suns had absolutely no answer on defense, and game got completely out of hand, where I think it was like it ended up being a double-digit margin. That's the sort of situation the Suns are in right now, because they've been playing a lot of basketball lately, and they've been playing hard. And I think this is a tough spot for them, where they have the Heat coming in. The Heat have not necessarily had as grueling a schedule of late. They are fully healthy, and everyone will be available. When this Heat team has had everyone available, they are absolutely dynamic, and particularly in their ability to shoot the ball. If the defensive woes for the Suns around the perimeter that we saw late in that game against the Clippers manifest in this game against the Heat, this is not going to be close. I think the Heat pull off the upset here.
Does the Murray injury make you more likely to bet, say, the Clippers to win the West, or whatever your handicap is in the West? I have one on the Clippers. It certainly puts that thought in my head, like, okay, that eliminates one team from the mix. I don't believe in the Suns. I don't believe in the Jazz. And I'm still not really sure what I'm going to get with the Lakers here at this point. So if I had conviction on the Clippers, should I be going back to the well on that?
Man, I've been struggling with this exact question for about a week now, and I agree 100%. I don't buy the Jazz. Yes, they're going to finally win a playoff series. They've underachieved in the playoffs three straight years. They'll finally win a series, but it's going to be against, the 1-8, in the 1-8 matchup. And, I don't think they can necessarily carry that momentum into, a series against the likes of the Lakers, who they would likely run into in round two. They're never going to have the best player on the floor against any of these other elite teams. What you're getting out of your second unit becomes a lot more muted in the playoffs. And that's really how the Jazz have been largely getting it done this season. So I'm with you that the Jazz will eventually run into trouble before they get to the finals. And similarly, the Suns with their inexperience, I think, was going to cost them at some point during this playoff run. So I agree that those two you can downgrade reasonably in terms of their likelihood to win the West. And now, the Nuggets were kind of the in-betweeners for me between the LA teams and the Suns and the Jazz. And I would now put them, down in the very unlikely to win the West without Murray. You're left with the Lakers and the Clippers. Who's going to emerge is largely going to depend on how healthy Anthony Davis is. When he first got injured, it was very clearly marginally an Achilles injury, and an overuse Achilles injury in this shortened season is spooky. So before I take any action, I'd like to see how he comes back. We're going to probably see him by the end of this week, get some limited minutes. It's not going to be with LeBron James yet. LeBron James is another 2 weeks out. But if those two players are healthy come the end of May, then the West is still the Lakers to lose. If something sets either one back during the playoffs, then the Clippers should be the odds-on favorite in the West.
All right, coming back with Drew from the Deep Dive podcast. Found out how he did in the Masters, how that went for him, and then his latest thoughts on the NFL draft. Where do we stand? A little more than 2 weeks out. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. It's Gil Alexander, Drew Dinsick from the Deep Dive podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at whale_capper. How did your Masters go, Drew?
Overall, it was a smashing success. It always feels a little weird if you don't hit the outright. You're kind of like, I didn't do well. But in reality, that was a small portion of my bankroll, and I had no Matsuyama at all. In fact, I think the only I had a loss on top Asian. I had Kim over Matsuyama, and so that was the only exposure I had, and that was a loser. But there were a couple absolute smashes. Top amateur Osborne, I got in at 4.5 to 1,
beautiful.
4 to 1. Across a couple different places. That was huge. That was a no sweater. That was done by Friday. Similarly, I had a number of miss the cut plays. Rory, Brooks Koepka, a couple of big numbers for some guys who were kind of out of form. I took a shot against DJ in a couple of matchups. He doesn't make the cut. That was nice. So overall, it was a pretty solid winning weekend. And I thought it was reasonably entertaining. The best part of the Masters, at least from my standpoint, is always Thursday, because you're watching golf all day.
Of course.
It's kind of like the March Madness tournament. The games on Thursday, the first Thursday, don't really matter. But it's so fun to just sit around and just embrace the the full day of sports that you can melt into. And that was exactly the way Thursday played out. And the fact that the course was especially tough, and that a bunch of guys who were reasonable favorites, were struggling. That was fun to watch. I was You know, I was pretty disappointed in Jordan Spieth's course management. Usually that's one of his strengths. And, you know, I thought, you know, he left a lot of shots out on the golf course with some of the decisions he made, clubs that he chose, and, you know, not taking his medicine a couple of times that he had some wayward tee shots. He could have absolutely had a better score. And similarly, John Rahm, like, you know, he waited way too long to really kind of, you know, start getting aggressive with that golf course. I think if there was a fifth round in that one, I don't know that Matsuyama can hold off, you know, what Rahm had cooking.
He saved me, man. That final round statement, because I had him top European, so yeah, that included same. The UK, yeah. So that was a big win for me. And then nice. Corey Connors Friday and Saturday with his matchups against Reed and Morikawa, both as dogs. Those two things saved me, because I was like you. I didn't have any Matsuyama, though I did have Matsuyama before the final round, because I thought minus 130 was ridiculously low. So I took some
yes.
of that.
Yes. You know. Yeah, people were all about he was going to choke with a 4-shot lead, and I didn't see it. I didn't see that at all.
Historically, it doesn't happen, right? Like, it was really historically, if you look at the Masters numbers, it was him against four dudes, four strokes behind. No one else was winning that. Although you know, people made runs, Schauffele being the most significant, but you know, it lasted for a blip, right? Yeah. Schauffele goes into the bunker. So he only picks up two strokes, and then he goes into the water subsequently, and so that was that.
The math didn't work out on that one at all, because it was literally this is the price for Matsuyama not to just turn into a puddle. Like he was going to have to give it back for that, you know, to lose that lead, because no one, the course wasn't playing, you know, it wasn't playing soft enough that someone was going to be able to make up the four strokes in that range of players who were in the chase pack. So it was that was a strange way that one was lined, I thought. And, you know, Matsuyama coming out of the weather delay and being so clutch on Saturday.
Yes.
Like just absolutely lights out. I don't know why anyone expected he was going to, you know, melt on Sunday.
We'll save most of the NFL draft talk for next week and the week after, but in our final 60 seconds here, Drew, where do you stand for, you know, 16 days away from the first round? You're still on board with the, it ain't Mac Jones at three.
Yeah. I've convinced myself fully that San Francisco is playing, you know, is playing PSYOPs with us, and that they really intend to take Fields.
Yeah.
And I've also convinced myself, even if I'm wrong and they take Mac Jones, they are actually the ones who are wrong. They should have taken Fields. You know, so
that's right.
I'm at that stage of just deluding myself at this point.
We're at the even if we're wrong, you should have done what we said.
Yes,
kind of
exactly.
Thing.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like, well, you'll all be fired in 3 years for this pick if you end up going that route.
Yeah, I've already said it's like I could be very wrong about this, but even if I'm right and it's not Mac Jones, it doesn't mean I'm going to win my bets, right? Because I have Justin Fields at two, Justin Fields at three. Who knows? Maybe they want somebody else. Drew, always appreciate it. We'll talk more draft next week.
Sounds great.
Whale_Capper. And, of course, the Deep Dive podcast. Appreciate it, man, as always.
All right. Best of luck, guys.
You too. Wherever podcasts are distributed, that's where you can check them out. Great podcast with he and Andy Molitor. We'll come back. Paul Carr on the Champions League. And, oh, this little matter of people wanting to put Julian Edelman in the Hall of Fame. Oh, stop it. Next on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
The spring sports betting action is just getting started. Our recent experts are covering early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft. We'll give you all the tools to make the most of every bet, including our 24/7 video coverage, odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com, our daily members-only best bet emails, and in-depth coverage of every major event and point spread weekly. The weather and the betting action is heating up. Now is the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. Forgive me for this one foray into sports radio, away from an actual betting segment here for a second. But Paul Carr and I had this discussion offline yesterday. And Paul, if we could bring you in, Paul Carr, ladies and gentlemen, from True Media Networks and the Expected Value Podcast. You ever have a conversation where you're like, I don't know if I... You just got, I got more upset. So Julian Edelman retires. How you doing, Paul, by the way?
Hi, I'm well, Gil.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, we'll talk to you. We'll talk our Champions League picks here momentarily. But first,
more importantly,
real American football, for God's sakes. All right, so Julian Edelman retires from the Patriots, 3-time Super Bowl champion. And bravo, by the way, you know, great career, playoffs, phenomenal, maybe one of the iconic catches in Super Bowl history, and absolutely a guy who should be in the Patriots ring of fame. But then there's a series of tweets, and I want you to react to these. Here's a sportsbook, FanDuel sportsbook poll. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer, where they set the yes at +120? Here's a subsequent tweet or two. This from, what's this one from right here? This is from Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout. Edelman is to me a Hall of Famer. Is his impact in the playoffs was undeniable, plus he had 11 years of basically being Brady's go-to wide receiver. And finally, from the great Adam Schefter, who everybody's familiar with at ESPN, Adam Schefter chiming in with the following. He's on board with this as well. As the MVP of this year's Super Bowl, this is back in 2019, Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman is playing himself into a spot in Canton in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. To all of that, Paul, you say what?
Let me start like what you said. Edelman was a very good player, maybe a great player. Like I said, should be in the Patriots Ring of Honor, should have the accolades and people remembering his career. One of the great postseason careers we've ever seen. He's not a Hall of Famer, and it's not close. I mean, if he's ever a finalist, makes that final 10 or 15, I'd be shocked. And I mean, we could go, I spent way too much time looking at numbers yesterday. he's not close to Wes Welker, who was basically the same guy in New England for longer and better. He's not Jarvis Landry, a contemporary, kind of a slot possession type of guy. I mean, you look at guys he's behind on yards and receptions lists, and there's guys, you know, someone like me who's pretty well versed in NFL history, I've never heard of Reggie Rucker. Isaac Curtis, like these are guys he's behind. And again,
I have
numbers,
sadly,
not everything.
I have heard of both of those guys, and yes, they are not Hall of Famers. Yes.
Yeah. Again, numbers are not everything, but it's not like this is close. You know, if he's kind of on the border numbers wise, maybe that postseason pushes him in. But I mean, 156th in yards, 75th in receptions. He's outside the top 250 in touchdowns, behind luminaries like Miles Austin and Vance Johnson and Darnay Scott. I don't mean to degrade him because he was a really, really good player for a decade.
Pat Tilley has more career receiving yards. Yes.
I'm sure you just made that up.
I think I may have laid eyes on Pat Tilley playing for the Cardinals as a child. No, I mean, here's why. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this, because we don't randomly bring up, you know, Hall of Fame candidacies on the show, because there's really no sports betting angle to it. But I think what really bothered me about this, and why I got increasingly angry as the tweets poured in about Julian Edelman being in the Hall of Fame, is I went to Canton, Ohio in the year 2008 when Art Monk was inducted in the National Football League Hall of Fame. Art Monk, who, by the way, when he retired, had the most receptions in the history of the National Football League. By the way, he's top 25 yardage as well. Art Monk, who was at the center of Super Bowl teams, it took him 9 years to get in. It was so offensive to those of us who grew up watching the Washington football team that it took 9 years that we gave him, and this is the truth, a 4.5-minute standing ovation in Canton, which was a giant middle finger to all of those voters who didn't put him in earlier. So now you're coming and you're saying, oh, Julian Edelman should be in the Hall of Fame. Are you kidding me? And I think what bothers me about this even further is, let me just tell you a story. When Bill Simmons had his website, before he ever became famous, and he was like the Boston sports guy, he wrote this great column. He was awesome. He was so entertaining, and we all loved him. And one day he put out a poll, and I was young. He put it, so I responded to it. He was like, hey, like, give me your best NBA comeback ever that you remember. And I remember citing to him this very obscure Washington Bullets comeback in the playoffs against the Julius Irving, Moses Malone, maybe even Charles Barkley, Philadelphia 76ers, where the Bullets scored the last 17 points of the game. They came back from the last 18 points of the game, last 17. They came back from a 16-point deficit and beat the Sixers in a playoff game. And Bill Simmons responded to me and he said, some teams are more important than others. And I remember that. That always stuck with me. First of all, that was the end of Bill Simmons for me. I was like, dude,
you're out,
right? You're out. What do you mean some team? You asked me for the best comeback in history. Some teams are more important than others. So the Julian Edelman Hall of Fame candidacy thing triggered that for me. Yeah. And obviously, well, you know, Bill Simmons poll is not the same as the Hall of Fame, but going back to the Art Monk thing,
right.
Teams are not important than others when it comes to individual players' candidacies. I'm sorry. It shouldn't work that way. This dude, if he played for another team, those stats don't measure. So it triggered for me, and I just was so amused at myself. I was like, why am I getting angry about this?
Yep.
But you're with me. No way.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's an element that counts of accomplishments, which kind of goes to team, but it's not quite the same thing, of like team accomplishments, of fame, for whatever that intangible is worth. But yeah, it reminds me of when I was at ESPN, Teddy Bruschi retired, and obviously New England is near ESPN, which is in Connecticut, so there's a lot of Patriots fans and such. And at a much smaller level, there was hey, is Bruschi Hall of Fame? And it's like, he made one Pro Bowl. Settled a good player, won three Super Bowls, great guy to work with also, which we didn't know at the time. But Edelman never made a Pro Bowl.
Not a one.
Everybody makes the Pro Bowl. Mitch Trubisky has made a Pro Bowl. and I know maybe he missed one or two because the Patriots won the Super Bowl or something, but you know, we're starting to split hairs so far down the line that it doesn't matter. If you don't make a Pro Bowl, I don't think you should be in the Hall of Fame. That's
didn't
my
Julian
take.
Edelman get suspended for PED use? Just throw
that we haven't even touched on that.
We haven't even touched on that. Now, he is a Hall of Fame in some other categories that have nothing to do with football, but that's a whole nother show.
Different conversation.
different conversation, different time. We'll come back. Paul has Champions League plays for us. We got a couple games today, a couple games tomorrow. We'll talk about the two today. Coming back on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
BetMGM welcomes you to Showtime with a chance to win $100 for a $1 wager on the Clippers-Pacers game. Just use bonus code VSIN100 and you're on your way to betting with the king of sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com for more details and use promo code VSIN100 to bet $1 and win $100 if either team hits a three. Just one three, that's all. New customer offer, paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. That's BetMGM.com, by the way. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. And in Indiana, call 1-800-9 with it. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. Jason Kahn has also found some tweets that are on our side here. Warren Sharp. Hey, our buddy Warren Sharp at Sharp Football. Love Julian Edelman, he says, but compare his career to Hines Ward, who can't make the final ballot in Hall of Fame voting the last 5 years. Hines in catches, Hines in yards, Hines in touchdowns. Some of these are doubling up. Some of these are more than doubling Edelman up. Pro Bowls 4-0. Look at that. Touchdowns, 85 to 36. Yards, almost doubling him up there. And here's Seth Kaiser here. Tyreek Hill has 17 more touchdowns than Julian Edelman and has been playing in the NFL for 5 years. Our own John Goulet, who's our program director here at VSiN, he just texted this to me. I hope he doesn't mind my repeating this on air. But he points out, he goes, the notion that Edelman was really good for a decade is false. He played 11 seasons total. His last season, he was injured and had 21 catches. His first four seasons, he had 714 total receiving yards combined. He was a really good wide receiver for 5, maybe 6 years. There it is, Paul Carr.
Yeah.
We rest.
And like the Hines Ward thing points to the backlog of receivers. I mean, it took Chris Carter a couple of years.
Yeah.
You mentioned Art Monk, it took 8 years. Even by the time Edelman is Hall of Fame eligible, there's probably going to be like 5 to 10 guys on the ballot who are clearly better than him. And some of those guys aren't close to the Hall of Fame either. And so yeah, I think in some ways we're all getting upset out of something that won't happen.
Yeah, maybe.
Conversation is out there. People are having the opinion, and but hey, isn't that the whole point of Twitter and
yeah,
radio well, anyway, so. Right?
Maybe we're getting all worked up over nothing. But there's people out there. No, I just can't let it happen. Again, let me just say this. Hall of Fame in other categories, absolutely on the leaflet for those who know what I'm talking about, an ambassador for all of those in the tribe. So there's wonderful things about Julian Edelman. By the way, he has a documentary about himself, too. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's horrific.
I haven't.
It's a horrific watch. Yeah, it's not terrible. Right.
I won't put it on the list.
Yeah, no, not a documentary recommendation. All right, Champions League. Now we go to the global football, the beautiful game. Champions League second leg. Let me get this right. Second leg of the quarterfinals of the Champions League. And today, well, we have to relive the memory of PSG and Bayern from last week, where PSG won 3-2 in a match. How can we put this? A game where it was as if one team, to put it in baseball terms, one team was like 2-for-2 with runners in scoring position, and Bayern was 2-for-25 with runners in scoring position. What were the shot numbers in that game again?
It was 31-6 in shots. It was 3.8 to about 1.5 in expected goals. So if they take those shots again in an average game, it's going to be like 3-2, 4-1, something in that range in favor of Bayern.
All right. And the other one is Chelsea and Porto, which Chelsea won 2-0 in the first. So now explain the, once again, we have to do this every time for those just landing on this and like, what's the Champions League? What's aggregate scoring? Can we do a little thumbnail on that for folks?
Yep. It's most goals over the two legs combined. If you're tied on goals, it is decided. The first tiebreaker is away goals. So PSG scored 3 goals in Germany, which is, so that's big. So if Bayern were to win the second leg 2-1, they're tied on aggregate. PSG would go through on away goals. So that goes, if you're betting on a too advanced sort of thing, you have to make sure you know what you're looking at there.
Okay. And you did recommend a Bayern to advance before the first one, right?
I did. So I took that. I have that at -150, which doesn't look great now. But now you can get +225 on them to advance, which I'm very tempted by. It's the right price. I mean, you're looking at, you know, a little less than a 1 out of 3 chance of going through. So that's the right price, but it's pretty tempting because there's a real possibility Bayern comes out and just blitzes them in this one and wins by a couple of goals.
Okay. And that's what Bayern has to do to advance, correct?
Right. Yeah. The simplest thing is win by 2 goals
simplest
for them
thing.
To advance. Okay. You know, they could win 4-3 and have 4 away goals, which I don't think is completely out of the question. I don't think it's likely.
Right.
But yeah, a 2-goal win is the simplest way for Bayern to get through.
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, that's right. For them to win by 1, they'd have to get to 4 goals because
of 3-2 to force extra time.
3-2 to force extra time. That's right. Okay. So then let's start there. How do you approach this second leg?
Yeah, so I mean, I see this leg looking a lot like the first leg. And as we said, if they play the same leg, the same game, chances are Bayern's going to win it. So my play is Bayern to win this game. Again, that could be a 2-1 win. This is not for Bayern to advance. This is Bayern to win. And the price is about +120, which I think is a good price for them to get the win. I know they're on the road, but you said no fans or very few fans. That's not a huge factor. Bayern is better. You know, PSG is going to have a chance or two, kind of like they did in the first leg, where they get out on the counter, Mbappe and Neymar create these opportunities. And so, yeah, they will have real shots at getting a goal or two. PSG has shown they're a little more conservative in approaching these second legs. They were way up on Barcelona, a little bit different because they were ahead by more. But they tightened up in that, played for the 1-1 draw, and got it. Bayern is more aggressive, more ruthless, even without Robert Lewandowski. So I like Bayern to win this game, +120 is the price I got.
All right. And you are, you're not, pardon me, jumping back in on the two advance. You're not sure.
I haven't yet, but the game's in what? 4 hours, so there's still time.
There's still time for that to find a way into my account. I always say that I'm like, I don't have a money line parlay in my account yet, but somehow it might find its way into my account before the game starts. And I guess the last thing, and I didn't really bring this up, and now that I'm concocting the question, I'm already sort of answering in my head, which is, I mean, there was snow last time, but it really didn't have an effect. Bayern still dominated like you thought they would. So it wasn't like that was a mitigating factor, really, you don't think, right?
Well, I don't think so. You know, we didn't see guys slipping around. You know, they had the right cleats on. It didn't seem like an issue. So, yeah, I don't think it was an issue. You know, maybe some general discomfort, but it didn't seem to slow Bayern down at all. Instead, 31 shots, 3.8 expected goals. I think they're fine.
By the way, do you watch these with English announcers or with Spanish-speaking announcers?
I usually do English. The Spanish can be a little more fun slash crazy sometimes, though.
I use it as an educational tool. Try to listen to the Spanish announcers also. All right. So Bayern to win. Not sure yet about jumping back in on Bayern to advance. And again, for Bayern to advance, they either win by two goals or they figure out a way to win it 3-2 or to lead it 3-2, I guess, to force extra time. Yeah. And then, okay, so that's another point. Or they go 4-3 and then they would advance automatically. If it's 3-2 and it's extra time, let me get piece this all together. They're the road team today, so correct. Then they're at an immediate advantage.
Correct. Yeah. So if they get one goal in extra time, it basically counts double. And that's what we saw with Porto and Juventus last time around. So there is, I think it's a bad rule. I think they should figure out a way to work around it. But yeah, if Bayern does get to extra time, they have the edge because one goal is basically worth double.
There's the ESPN Plus piece that Paul Carr wrote about this. UEFA Champions League best bets for second leg of the quarterfinals. By the way, I can't tell you how much producer number 7, Jason Kahn, was thrilled that we got that cleared to put that up there.
Very excited. Happy.
Yeah. All right. Then Chelsea Porto, I should say. Leg number 2, Chelsea won the first 2-0. What do you got here?
So as we've talked about almost weekly, I've been riding the Chelsea under train very successfully for most of this calendar year. 14 of 17 games under Thomas Tuchel have had 2 or fewer goals since he took over as Chelsea manager. I will kind of caveat my pick just by saying Chelsea has shown signs in the last game or two of opening up the attack. They hung 4 goals on Crystal Palace on Saturday and had, I think it was over 3 expected goals. Now, Palace is terrible, so that could be a factor. But even the first leg between Chelsea and Porto had could have easily had 3 goals, and it was 2-0 in favor of Chelsea. So I'm edging my way off of the Chelsea train, but I'm not there yet. Like, I'm kind of standing on the back of the caboose, just eyeing, seeing what's going on, if I need to get ready to jump or not, but I'm sticking with it here. So I'm going to take the under 2.5 goals at minus 120. And a lot of it's just because this is such a perfect setup. So Chelsea won 2-0 in the road leg. And by the air quotes, I mean both these games are being played in Spain, because for COVID reasons, but this one will be the home leg for Chelsea. They have every motivation to just lock this up, shut it down. Maybe they sneak a goal early and just sit on it. But even with a 2-goal lead and 2 road goals, they would have to, you know, lose 3-0 or to not at least force extra time. So they have every reason to shut it down. They've shown they're good at shutting it down. Porto's offense is okay. They're not blowing the doors even off the Portuguese league right now. So I still like the under here, minus 120, under 2.5 for Chelsea Porto.
All right. These are both at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. Bayern to win. And then the one last go at the Chelsea under.
Yeah.
Maybe one last hurrah. Under 2.5 in the Chelsea Porto game. And we'll worry about Liverpool, Real Madrid, and Dortmund Man City tomorrow. How about that?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. 60 seconds. Did you end up betting the Masters? How'd you do?
I finished second in my little pool that I'm in with, you know, about 10 guys where we do a draft and such. So I didn't have like a great pick, but I mean, I had Justin Thomas, I had Tony Finau, I had Molinari and Cam Smith. So, you know, I had it was solid enough to like push me into second place in that pool. So it worked out that way.
Yeah.
And my annual like long shot play on my boy Gary Woodland didn't pay off here, but it did at the US Open a couple years ago.
Pride and joy of Topeka, Kansas.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Maybe the best individual accomplishment ever by a Topeka athlete.
I don't know. We'll look into your history. Maybe there was something.
unless you want to count Dean Smith.
Yes, unless you want to count Dean Smith. Paul coming to us from Topeka, Kansas, each and every time he's on. Thank you, Paul, and thank you for indulging me on the whole. Actually, I don't know if you indulged me or if I indulged you. We were on the same page with Julian Edelman.
I always love talking Halls of Fame. That's always fun.
Yes, a little drift into sports radio, but that's all right. People get passionate about it. And I don't know, maybe we're worried about nothing. Who knows? Thank you, Paul. Maybe. Appreciate it, man.
You bet. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Paul Carr. We'll talk Champions League second legs of those two games we just mentioned, Liverpool, Real Madrid, and Dortmund, Man City, tomorrow. I will do some midday action on that. I'm with him on Bayern. After seeing how they dominated that first leg, I'm all about Bayern today. So I'm definitely on that one. I might jump on the under in Chelsea as well. Thanks to all. Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi next, hosted by Brady Cannon. Coming back at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.